Members, I will now call the Post-Secondary Education and Workforce Subcommittee to order. Andrea, please call the roll.
Chair Mello?
Here.
Vice Chair Beltran?
Here.
Ranking Member Tant?
Here.
Representative Amnesty?
Here.
Representative Bell?
Here.
Representative Burfield?
Here.
Representative Cross?
Here.
Representative Dunkley?
Here.
Representative Escamani?
Here.
Representative Esposito?
Here.
Representative Gonzalez-Pittman?
Present.
Representative Henson?
Here.
Representative Keene?
Here.
Representative Lopez?
Here.
Representative Plasencia?
Here.
Representative Redman?
Here.
Representative Schoaf? Representative Temple?
Here.
Madam Chair, we have a quorum.
Thank you, Andrea. Members, and by your presence, we have a quorum. Members, I'll ask that you please all silence your cell phones. And if there are any members of the public that wish to speak or provide testimony to the subcommittee, please fill out an appearance card. Members, today we have two bills on our agenda. First, we have HB 947 with Representative Bartleman, Sexual Misconduct Information in Public K-20 Education. Representative Bartleman, you are recognized.
Thank you, Chair Mello, for hearing my bill today, and thank you for always having an open-door policy with all of the members. Thank you, Vice Chair Beltran, and thank you for your dissecting of the language. We're going to deal with that in a little bit. And I want to thank Ranking Member Tant for allowing me to present HB 947, Sexual Misconduct Information in K-20. Rape is the most underreported crime. Only 12% of child sexual abuse is reported to the authorities, and more than 90% of sexual assault victims on our college campuses do not report the crime. According to the National Sexual Violence Resource Center, 1 in 5 women and 1 in 16 men are assaulted while in college. As the mother of a daughter in a college, one of our state universities actually, I found the statistic quite alarming. And it became more alarming as I heard my friend recount her daughter's sexual assault experience that happened at one of our university's campuses. K-12 and higher education institutions across the country are notorious for failing to notify their students about their options after they have fallen victim to sexual assault. Florida does not currently statutorily require a sexual misconduct policy to be disseminated to students in K-20 institutions. An American Association of University Women Climate survey showed that less than half the students at one of our universities right here in Florida knew about the resources and reporting procedures for sexual assault. Currently, 11 states require a sexual misconduct policy to be disseminated to students in K-20, and House Bill 947 mirrors the language that was adopted by the great state of Texas. The bill requires each school district to provide to parents, students, and school employees the contact information of the Title IX coordinator, the process for placing and filing a sexual misconduct complaint, and support measures for a person who files a sexual misconduct complaint. This bill requires Florida college system institutions and state universities to create a policy related to sexual harassment, sexual assault, dating violence, and stalking. This policy must be included in the institution and the university student's handbook and personnel handbook, and they must create a link on the institution's and the university's website concerning sexual harassment, sexual assault, dating violence, and stalking policy. And this link must be accessible on the institution's or university's website homepage. Additionally, the bill will require the Florida College System and its institutions and universities to create and implement a comprehensive prevention and outreach program on sexual harassment, sexual assault, dating violence, and stalking. The program must address a range of strategies to prevent sexual harassment, sexual assault, dating violence, and stalking, including a victim empowerment program, a public awareness campaign, primary prevention strategies, bystander intervention strategies, and risk reduction strategies. This bill will also require all students during student orientations in the beginning of each semester to be provided information concerning these programs, the protocols for reporting an incident of sexual harassment, sexual assault, dating violence, or stalking, and the contact information of the coordinator. And that, Chair, is the bill.
Thank you, Representative Bartleman. Members, are there any questions on the bill? Okay, Representative Bartleman, I believe there is one amendment.
Yes. There is a friendly amendment, and Vice Chair Beltran is going to, it's his amendment.
Yes. Vice Chair Beltran, you're recognized to explain the amendment.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Rep. Bartleman, for your conversation and work with me on this amendment. This amendment just simply clarifies that you only need to have a web page dedicated to the policy. The original filed bill said a website, and I didn't want it to be construed to require you have a whole other domain, or you have to have multiple page website, or to build out some extensive thing. I think the web page would be sufficient. I think the bill sponsor agrees with me, and that would be linked from the main homepage. And so that is the amendment.
Thank you, Vice Chair Beltran. Our members, are there any questions on the amendment? Okay, seeing none, we will move into public testimony on the amendment. Is there anyone from the public that wishes to speak on the amendment? Seeing none, members, we are now in debate on the amendment. Is there any debate on the amendment? Okay, seeing none, Vice Chair Beltran, you're recognized to close on the amendment. Wave close. Okay. All those in favor of adoption of the amendment signify by saying yay.
Yay.
All those opposed, nay. Members, by your vote, the amendment is adopted. We are back on the bill as amended. We will now move into public testimony. Is there anyone from the public that wishes to speak on the bill as amended? Looks like we have Cody Rogers from Rape, Abuse, and Incest National Network. Thank you very much. Waves in support. And that is, I believe, all we... Nope, let's see. Okay, it looks like we have a Zoe Brewer. And I believe it's also from Rain. And Zoe, you're a proponent.
Yes.
Are you wishing to speak?
Yes.
Okay. Go ahead. You're recognized.
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Zoe Brewer. I'm the Policy and Grassroots Coordinator with RAIN, and I'm also a Florida resident. RAIN runs the largest anti-sexual violence organization in the country, and we also run the National Sexual Assault Hotline, where to date we have served 4.5 million survivors and their families across the country. I'm here today to express my support for HB 947, which would increase transparency around sexual misconduct policies in K-20 educational institutions. More often than not, K-12 students are entirely left out of the conversations surrounding campus safety from sexual violence. However, according to a 2014 survey done by the University of Illinois, 21% of middle school students reported that they experienced unwanted physical touching on school grounds. And as stated earlier by Representative Bartleman, a 2019 climate survey showed that 45% of students at a Florida university did not know about the resources that were available to them through their campus sexual misconduct policy. HB 947 would ensure that students in K-20 schools who experience sexual violence on their campus understand the resources that are available to them and the process of reporting sexual misconduct. For a survivor, the days and weeks following an assault can be incredibly confusing and traumatic. We never want a survivor to feel like they don't have options available to them just because a policy wasn't clearly communicated. In fact, every student, survivor or not, benefits when the complaint, investigation, hearing, and appeals process for students and families across Florida are incredibly clear. HB 947 would demystify this process, as well as guarantee that all parties are aware of the resources to prevent their academics from suffering while they navigate the complaint process. It's really important to note here that resources are not resources if you don't have access to them, if you don't know what they are, and if you don't understand them. Finally, I'd like to note that these sexual misconduct policies are already created and implemented at educational institutions across Florida. HB 947 takes this one step further to ensure that these policies are actually reaching the people that they were intended to serve. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Brewer. Next, we have Stefan Turkheimer from RAIN as well, also a proponent, waving in support. Thank you very much. It looks like we have Robin Graber from the Florida Council Against Sexual Violence. Okay, thank you very much. Okay, it looks like we have no more appearance cards. Members, we will now move into debate. Are there any members that wish to debate the bill as amended? Representative Escamani, you are recognized.
Thank you so much, Chairwoman. I just want to say thank you to Representative Bartleman for championing such an important issue. As you noted in your introduction, sexual assault, especially cases of rape, are unfortunately underreported in all environments. And of course, college campuses in particular have experienced just some egregious stories. And sometimes there's also not a clear path forward to how someone reports and even understands how to navigate that situation and seek resources. So providing this legislation to give that clear path forward is so essential. And I as a young woman who went to Florida colleges and, of course, have so many friends in our university system, I just want to say thank you for your leadership on this, and I look forward to voting yes.
Representative Tant, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to echo Representative Escamani's comments. I really appreciate the thoughtfulness that you put into your bills and the substance that you bring to the discussions that you do. And this is such a necessary and good bill, and I just really wanted you to know how much I appreciate you.
Thank you.
Seeing no further requests for debate, Representative Bartleman, you are recognized to close on your bill as amended.
I'm going to waive close.
Thank you, Representative Bartleman.
Thank
you. Okay, members. Representative Bartleman having closed. Andrea, please call the roll.
Representatives Amnesty?
Yes.
Bell?
Yes.
Beltran?
Yes.
Burfield?
Yes.
Cross?
Yes.
Dunkley?
Yes.
Escamani?
Yes.
Esposito?
Yes.
Gonzalez-Pittman?
Yes.
Hinson?
Yes.
Keene?
Yes.
Lopez?
Yes.
Placencia?
Yes.
Rudman?
Yes.
Schoaf?
Yes.
Tant?
Yes.
Temple?
Yes.
And Chair Mello?
Yes.
18 yeas, 0 nays.
Thank you, Andrea. Members, by your vote, HB 947 is shown reported favorably. Congratulations, Representative Bartleman. Okay, members, we will now take up HB 1291 relating to educator preparation programs. Representative Snyder, you are recognized to explain your bill.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, Vice Chair Beltran, Ranking Member Tant, and members of the committee. I'm here today to present House Bill 1291, Educator Preparation Programs. Here in the state of Florida, we have teacher preparation programs and educator preparation programs, which are two Department of Education recognized pathways for individuals to receive the required education to become certified teachers in the state of Florida. In addition to that, we have a educational school leader program for aspiring school leaders and administrators. What we're doing today in this bill is prohibiting these programs from distorting significant historical events or including a curriculum or instruction that teaches identity politics, violates the Florida Educational Equity Act, or is based on theories that systemic racism, sexism, oppression, and privilege are inherent in the institutions of the United States, and that they were created to maintain social, political, and economic inequities. This bill also requires that these programs afford candidates the opportunity to think critically, achieve mastery of academic program content, learn instructional strategies, and demonstrate competence. Madam Chair and members, that is the bill.
Thank you, Representative Snyder. Members, we're moving into questions on the bill. Questions on the bill. Representative Cross, you are recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Snyder, I had a question on a few definitions. So starting on line 23 and 24, the term identity politics, can you define what you mean by that or what the bill means by identity politics?
You are recognized, Representative Snyder.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for the question, Representative. We do not have an actual definition of identity politics defined in the bill, but as we look at what we did last year with the Florida Educational Equity Act, identity politics is when you group members of one race, color, or national origin based on their identity.
Representative Cross, did you have follow-up? You're recognized.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. And so where does that definition come from, and who would be kind of the arbiter of that definition?
Representative Snyder, you are recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Again, Representative, in the current language we have today, that is not listed in one of the definitions, but would be happy to look at that in the next stop and see if that's something that we could incorporate from a definition perspective. If it's not mentioned elsewhere, I'll have to do some additional research to see if that is called out in the FEEA.
Did you have an additional question?
Yes, I have two follow-ups, if you
wouldn't
mind.
Okay, you're recognized.
Thank you. Moving on to line 28, again, in regards to these teacher preparation program courses, it states that it must afford candidates the opportunity to think critically. Again, can you define what that would mean?
Representative Snyder, you are recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you again for the question, Representative. Again, that would just be, as the words speak for themselves, to be able to think critically. And again, what we're talking about here is either curriculum or teaching that explicitly begins to group individuals, and that's what we're trying to avoid here is groupthink, and every student should be able to think critically throughout these courses.
Representative Cross, you are recognized for one more follow-up.
Thank you, Madam Chairwoman. So thinking about those two ideas, wondering if you could explain how a teacher may be expected to think critically but could not be perceived as significant historical events, and who would make that determination.
Representative Snyder, you are recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll be honest, I'm not sure I fully understand the question. Could I maybe hear that one more time or in a different version?
Sure. So, for example, if a teacher was sharing something about the Civil War and was sharing the examples of slaves or other oppressed people, from that viewpoint, would that be considered distorting those significant historical events, or would that just be providing a different perspective?
Representative Snyder, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for the question. All students in the K-20 setting, and including in these preparation programs, should absolutely know about the Civil War and slavery and think critically as they learn through the history associated therein.
Representative Dunkley, you are recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think Rep. Cross kind of asked the question in regards to, I kind of wanted to know, how do you qualify that word distort or distortion, and who would have that autonomy to decide what distort means by the bill here? Thank you.
Representative Snyder, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for the question, Representative. Ultimately, if a challenge were to be made that a student felt that historical facts would be distorted, they'd be able to file that complaint just like any other complaint process within the education system, where that would get ultimately routed up to the Department of Education for them to make a ruling based on the merits of the complaint.
Representative Dunkley, you are recognized for a follow-up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think you just mentioned that it would go. So you're saying there is a channel currently that has already been set in place that will be able to address that if this is passed into law. If there's a channel for them to be able to make those decision about why they think there is a distortion.
Representative Snyder, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and again, thank you for the additional clarification on that. And so just to back up a little bit, Representative, what we're talking about with these, whether it's the teacher preparation programs or the leadership preparation programs, there are 38 of these programs that are recognized by the Department of Education. If in the event of the coursework that happens within these programs, if it was to be found that something in that curriculum was distorting historical fact, that would ultimately, and again, just depending on the circumstances, that complaint would get funneled up to the Department of Education. So there's a kind of variety of ways where that complaint, where that could originate from.
Okay, Representative Hinson, you are recognized for a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And so Rep. Snyder, based on the line of questioning that's already gone forth, a distortion would only be determined if a student lodged a complaint.
Representative Snyder, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for the question. So I think there'd be a variety of ways on, how that complaint could be brought forward. It could come from faculty. With all of these programs, there is a periodic review that DOE does on the curriculum, and so it could happen in that way in a periodic review, or it could happen, from either a teacher, a participant, faculty, staff could see that happening within the curriculum and make that complaint. And if I could just to clarify, so I guess one scenario would be the complaint. The other scenario would be in the course of review by Department of Education.
Representative Hinson, you're recognized for a follow-up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Who would mediate the accuracy of the information or the distortion of the information? How would that get from point A to point B?
Representative Snyder, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for the question. Ultimately, that would lie within the well-trained staff within the Department of Education. I could get some further clarification for the next stop, Representative, on exactly what those channels would look like, but it would be within DOE staff. Thank
you. Representative Hinson, you're recognized for a follow-up.
Thank you. There was a question about critical thinking skills from the way I was trained, and so I may need to be retrained after this. But the way I was trained, critical thinking requires fact and opinion. Where in your bill does it allow opinion?
Representative Snyder, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for the question, Representative. Nothing in this bill would prohibit individuals from expressing their opinion. However, when we get into the language specifically, and when we look back at the Florida Educational Equity Act that we passed, and if you'll just bear with me one second, Representative. Where we draw the line is when the curriculum is subjecting any student or employee to training or instruction that espouses, promotes, advances, inculcates, or compels such student or employee to believe any of the following, and we have that laid out. And so that's where we draw the line, is at the actual curriculum level.
Representative Hinson,
thank you for bearing with me, Madam Chair. I do have a few, two, maybe.
So you're recognized.
Can a teacher talk about sexism or racism without violating this bill?
Representative Snyder, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, they can.
Follow up, you're recognized. Representative Hinson.
Thank you very much. So all of the items that were laid out, they would be allowed to at least have a discussion about without violating the bill, like sexism, racism, identical politics, and all of the other items that are laid out in the FEEA, they would be allowed to have those discussions without violating the bill?
Representative Snyder, I believe she just expanded on the last question that you answered. You're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And again, thank you for the line of questioning, Representative. They can have discussion within a class, and what we are saying is that when it comes to the curriculum and the teaching, we are going to prohibit the distortion of significant historical facts or include a curriculum or instruction that teaches identity politics or, again, I can continue to read that definition, but that's what we're saying here.
If you,
I'm going to leave if that you
may, may we move on to Representative Eskamani, and we will come
I
back to
one
you.
One final question.
Okay, Representative Henson, you're recognized.
So I'm just going to leave that alone and say, how is this bill going to improve our teacher shortage?
Representative Snyder, you are recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for the question, Representative. Again, I think something that we can all be proud of is that Florida leads the nation in education quality. And as someone, and I believe we all believe in continual process improvement, what we do know is that our third grade literacy rates are hovering around 50%. And so as we look at what do we want in our preparation programs, we want our teachers to be focused on strategies appropriate for instruction of English language learners, how to deal with students with disabilities, mathematics, English language arts. Those are the types of things within our preparation programs that will not only raise the quality of education, but help us as we work to stem and tighten up this teacher shortage.
Representative Eskamani, you are recognized.
Thank you so much, Chair. Okay, Rep, few questions. So I know you've cited the Florida Education Equity Act, which most folks in the public might know as the Stop Woke Act. Parts of that have been enjoined by a court because they're likely unconstitutional. So why are we citing or referencing, you know, pieces of Florida law that may be unconstitutional?
Representative Eskamani, I would definitely like for us to not defer to nicknames that have been provided of bills that we've passed. But Representative Snyder, you are recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you again for the question, Representative. I would say we're going to let the courts continue to let that play out. In the meantime, we're going to continue to address our preparation programs and continue standing up for quality education.
Okay. Follow-up, Chair.
You are recognized, Representative Eskamani.
Thank you so much. So diving a little bit more into what type of teacher preparation programs would be affected, and I know we talked about this a little bit offline, but could you walk me through, is it just college universities, is it K-12, would school district certification programs be impacted? Maybe walk me through what levels of preparation would actually be impacted.
Representative Snyder, you are recognized.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. And again, thank you for the question, Representative. Did enjoy our conversations last night. And so what we're addressing in this bill, there are currently 38 programs that are recognized by the Department of Education for these teacher preparation programs. I'm not sure of the exact number for the leader preparation programs, but this would only apply to the programs that are either currently recognized by DOE as these prep programs or future programs that we're seeking to be recognized programs in the state.
Okay. Follow-up, Chair?
You're recognized.
Thank you so much. I'm assuming that includes private and public providers. And would any make immediate changes upon this bill becoming law?
Representative Snyder, you're recognized.
Yep. Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for the question. You're correct. This would apply to both public and private institutions, and any of the current providers would be subject to review and be held to the standard upon passage of this law.
Okay. Follow-up, Chair?
You are recognized, Representative Eskamani.
Thank you so much. Just thinking about what some of the operational impact of this policy could be, one area is redlining. So there's been debate if redlining is real or not. Personally, I believe there's plenty of fact to support redlining. However, the reason why I bring up this question is that, you know, some topics that teachers may be taught in prep programs help them understand, for example, what it means to teach in a Title I school, what's the history in that community, and redlining could impact the reason why a community is impoverished or predominantly a community of color. And can I answer that question of what is redlining, Representative? I know I'm not supposed to get questions, but can I provide that context?
Yes, you're recognized to answer Representative Snyder's question.
Okay. So redlining in you know, historical context is an unfortunate application of essentially dictating where some people are allowed to live versus not. And it involves the public and the private sector. So governments, when, you know, this is post-Reconstruction, they would put policies into place to say that African Americans can only live in this part of a town compared to white Americans. Oftentimes they were parts of a community that were, you know, near waste, you know, zoning that is unhealthy, low air quality, so forth. And so those, the impact of that is still present today. Many communities that were redlined before are still divided today and face high levels of poverty and so forth. And so that can be very important information for an educator to understand. Some may say that teaching redlining is distorting history because they have a subjectivity to it. So my question is, you know, the uses and implementation of redlining and how it led to the makeup of neighborhoods, hence schools in those neighborhoods, could actually be really helpful for an educator to understand the struggles of that community. Would your bill impact the teaching of something like redlining?
So it's also known as steering, and it is against the law, but please go ahead and do your best, Representative Snyder.
No, thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you, Representative, for bringing me up to speed on that. What I would say is that the good news is, and I hope within our preparation programs, that they begin teaching the great news on what happened in House Bill 1 last year, where we said that regardless of a zip code, regardless of where a child lives, if they want to pursue traditional public school, public charter schools, or private schools or homeschools, regardless of the zip code, that opportunity is afforded to them.
All right, follow-up, Chair.
Yes, you're recognized.
Thank you so much. I guess my question is that there's parts of our history that impact today. So regardless of what policies are in place today, you know, historical context can impact the future of a child and an educator's effectiveness to help that child have a bright future. And so is there any concern that your bill would limit the teaching of some of these parts of our history, though it is illegal, correct? Echo the chair's point on that. It still happened. And so it has a ripple effect today. Are we going to allow teachers to understand that ripple effect, I guess is my question.
Representative Snyder, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And again, thank you for the question, Representative. We want all historical facts to be taught, blemishes and all, when it comes to the history of our country.
Okay. And then, Chair, I just have one more in case more folks have questions. Let me send it to that.
You're recognized.
Thank you. So thinking about other parts of Florida law, I mentioned this last week too, but you know, we do have legislation that prohibits educators from shielding students and faculty from certain instruction they might find offensive. So I'm curious, how does that current law intersect with this bill? Because again, some people that say things are distortions, they're personally just offended by it and they don't want it taught, even though it might not be distorted. So how does that intersect with current law?
Representative Snyder, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And again, thank you for the question, Representative. I would say, you know, kind of as we talked about earlier, if there was a question on if there was a distortion taking place in the teaching, that would be routed up through the appropriate channels for DOE to make that determination.
Okay, are there any further questions? Okay, seeing no further questions, we will now move into public testimony. Is there anyone from the public that wishes to speak on the bill? We have some appearance cards. It looks like we have, and I apologize if I mispronounce your last name, Frank Petermas, Peterman, I apologize, the third, FEA, and you waive in opposition. Thank you. Kara Gross from the American Civil Liberties Union of Florida. And you waive in opposition. Trish Neely, LWV, Florida, who is an opponent and wishes to waive in opposition. Laura Munoz, Florida Student Power, also wishing to waive in opposition. And Yenezabel Valorio, 6 Action, and she also wishes to waive in opposition. Members, we are moving into debate. Any members that wish to debate the bill? Okay, Representative Henson, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Rep. Snyder, this bill leaves a bad taste in my mouth. I can even hear it in the sound of my voice. There are many inconsistencies in this training bill that contradicts other points on other recent bills, other law. Specifically, the African American Work Group recommended numerous distortions of history. And until we as lawmakers for the state of Florida can collaborate in unity about what's real and what's fiction, I'm going to be opposing this. Thank you, Madam Chair.
And Representative Eskamani, you are recognized in debate.
Thank you so much, Madam Chair, and thank you, Rep, for answering my questions. And I want you to know that, you know, I just came from a committee where we voted to preserve Confederate monuments, so I'm restraining myself because I my heart hurts. You know, I get frustrated because I see policies that are supporting a perspective of history that is politically motivated. And by no means do I think that's the bill sponsor's intention, but just based on the past several sessions where we've had similar legislation, there does seem to be this pattern where the state gets to dictate speech, the state gets to dictate what history is appropriate versus not appropriate. And I do have concerns that we're citing parts of Florida law that are being enjoined currently. And so I don't think we should continue legislating those areas while we're waiting for courts to make their decisions. But I also do think of the teacher shortage. And I think that many teachers have shared with me they're frustrated and overwhelmed by the politicization of education. They're scared of doing the wrong thing to get fired because they talk about a part of a racial history or they talk about sexism or, you know, identify an LGBTQ plus student or maybe they are LGBTQ and fearful of that. And so I just get overwhelmed by the pattern of policies that continue to fit under this banner of opposing identity politics, which ironically is not defined in law. The only time we mentioned any politics in law was in Senate Bill 266 last session, and it's never defined. So we're, you know, further creating confusion and cloudiness for educators, for faculty, for universities. And I just don't think that's in our best interest. We have to provide folks guidance and bumpers, you know, what they can and cannot do. But I also feel like this is another one of those examples of policy that it's being pursued for more political reasons and academic reasons. And perhaps there are edits we can make, amendments we make to change that. But as it stands now, I cannot support this bill as I do fear its repercussions are going to not only make it harder to retain or recruit good teachers, but create even more confusion for what teachers can and cannot do, which at this point, I think we should provide them with more of a roadmap than more rules, because they already have so many rules to follow. And so I'm happy to continue the dialogue, but I will be a no vote today and encourage my colleagues to do the same. Thank you, Chairwoman.
Thank you, Representative Eskamani. Representative Temple, you are recognized in debate.
Thank you, Chair. So as many of you know, my background is in K-12 education. Part of my role was to monitor these programs and help teachers and help administrators go through the process to get the certifications and things that they need to do. What this bill does, and we talked a lot about it, a lot of different things that this bill doesn't do. What this bill does is basically to focus on the facts, not your opinions. And I can tell you from personal, as a parent, and as an educator, on both sides that where educators cross that line, you should never know what your teacher's beliefs are. That's not the time nor the place. And I've seen great teachers do it very well in tackling difficult topics, dealing with civics. I knew the teacher very well, and I've shared this story before. The students did not know what side of the aisle the teacher was on, and that's how it's supposed to be. When I taught, my students did not know that I was a faith believer, that I prayed every morning, that I went to church on Sundays, because that wasn't the appropriate time to share. What this bill does is that focus on the skills that are necessary to be great teachers and great administrators. And for that, I'll be up.
Thank you, Representative Tant. You are recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know how much I really respect and admire you, and I love being your friend, so thank you. I do have concerns about this bill, though, regarding the definitions. We don't know what inherent racism really means. We don't know what identity politics is. We don't know really what distortion of historical events means from one person to the next. The critical thinking, what is that? So I do have concerns about this bill. I'm going to be down today on this bill. I will work with you if you want to work on some of those definitions for this, but I do have too many concerns to vote up on this bill today. But thank you so much for recognizing me and for your work.
Representative Cross, you're recognized in debate.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I think this bill continues to perpetuate what I think is a dangerous narrative that our schools, our universities, you know, in this case through teacher preparation program courses, are indoctrinating educators and, you know, subsequently our students. I think the lack of defined definitions in here related to thinking critically, but also just distorting facts. I think there could be a very fine line between thinking critically and someone thinking that you're distorting historical facts, and not knowing really who is going to be the arbiter of that, I think puts teachers and support staff in a very difficult situation, and particularly seeing, you know, the teacher shortage that we're having, the conversations I've had with people in the education system today that just do not feel supported. I think this is going to make it really difficult for us to address the educational needs that we have in our state. You know, last week in this committee, we had a really thoughtful debate and talked passionately about how it's important that everyone on college campuses feel safe and comfortable. And that should be extended to our teachers. And I don't think that this bill does that. And so I won't be able to support it today.
Representative Beltran, Vice Chair Beltran, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Rep, for reaching out about this bill. I was kind of hoping I wasn't going to debate, or I wasn't going to feel a need to debate on this. I was hoping maybe we could just go on to the next bill, or I guess adjourn, or whatever it was. But I do, having listened to the discussion, I guess I do feel compelled to share some thoughts. We've had this discussion before. I mean, obviously, this is a similar theme with a lot of the same colleagues of mine that we've had this discussion in slightly different context in other committees and other sessions. And it kind of comes down to we're doing public education. We can't teach everything all the time to everybody. And so we do need to curate our curriculum and decide what we're going to teach, what we're going to emphasize, what, you know, maybe students are going to get exposed to somewhere else, if at all, on their own time or in a private setting, or as Rep. Temple was saying, maybe in a religious setting. There are other avenues for instruction. And we have to decide what we're going to teach. And we don't have to teach everything in the school. We got to teach, I think, at least several of my colleagues mentioned, you know, we want to focus on the core things. And then, you know, kids may pick up other things in college or in their religious studies and so forth. And when we're doing something inappropriate in education, I know how to say it. Like, I have a bill I've filed with a colleague of mine across the aisle, and there was something inappropriate. It was, you know, teaching about that somehow folks benefited from slavery. I thought that was inappropriate. A lot of my colleagues, or a lot of even other Republicans, Tim Scott, for example, thought that was inappropriate. I knew how to say it. Went ahead and sponsored some legislation on that. So I know how to say it when we're doing something wrong. This does not strike me as wrong. This seems reasonable that we would not, just as we wouldn't try to inject that into the curriculum. I don't think we should try to inject these types of themes, things like identity politics or things of that sort, into the curriculum either. Because here's where it is. It's very mushy. I think Ranking Member Tant said she didn't know what some of these themes were or what they all encompassed. And it's like, if we don't know what they're encompassing, then why are we teaching teachers to teach them to the students? I don't know. I mean, if you don't know what identity politics are, like, let's just leave that aside and teach them mathematics and reading and kind of the core history about the Constitution and things of that nature and not get into these things. Because the problem with teaching these types of topics, and I'm not saying our society is not perfect. We made a lot of mistakes. Every country makes mistakes. I think we make fewer mistakes than other countries. We made mistakes. That's part of our history. We, you know, we're not denying that. But fundamentally, you're going to go into one classroom with a teacher of one persuasion, and they're going to teach it one way, and you're going to be in another county or maybe another school in that county or maybe the classroom next door, and you're going to get a completely different instruction because that teacher, when they're teaching on these type of topics, is going to have a different persuasion or a different perspective. And those perspectives are valid, and there are places in the marketplace of ideas to exchange those perspectives. But it shouldn't be that you're an elementary school kid and you're getting a different education in one place or the other on these topics in such a fundamental way where people maybe disagree on those. And that's why, you know, we're supposed to promote, I think it says in our Constitution, we're supposed to promote a uniform education. And I think on these broad brush things, I think we do. We need to make sure you're not getting, you're not going to go into one classroom and feel horrible about the United States. And then you go into another classroom and things are completely whitewashed. And we do cover these topics. We cover these topics. There's required instruction about different groups and how they may have been mistreated or what their experience is. There's required instruction. That's prescribed and that's appropriate. And I guess I'll leave it with this. You know, I guess there was a suggestion that, you know, some of these bills came through for political reasons. I hope no one thinks I participated in bills for political reasons. I try to do them despite the political reasons, not because of them. You know, I guess we're talking in euphemisms here, but let's just say this, that the need to pass any bills for political reasons, I think it's perhaps, we'll say, abated recently. And yet we're moving this bill. So I think that reason having perhaps abated, I think this bill needs to be taken on the merits. We've done other bills in a similar vein. And if we're saying, you know, we had the, I think it was called the Stop Woke Act, and we had a piece of legislation last year that, in fact, we're making some changes to that statute. And so if we're going to prescribe in other areas, for example, in post-secondary education, and we're going to prescribe in what the younger kids are doing in their elementary education. But then in the teacher instruction programs, we're still going to allow this sort of thing. Because this is a program we're teaching people how to teach, and we're going to allow them to teach people how to teach things that we're not allowing them to teach. I think there would be kind of a lack of uniformity in our laws. So I'll leave it with that.
Thank you, Vice Chair Beltran. And I want to say to this committee, as your chair, I put a lot of thought and discovery into every one of these bills. And in my due diligence, Carrington brings me a lot of information, reading material for me to process and think about and take into consideration before I put these bills on our agenda. And this truly exists. I have a binder full of colleges with this prep in the binder. And it was shocking to me to see this. And in reference to our bill last week, I heard many of you feel that it was an overreach and that it isn't a problem, but we've had students assaulted and arrested two different cases since our committee last Thursday evening. That's a very short time for students on campuses to be assaulted and people to be arrested. So why we sit here and we're sometimes skeptical about whether we really need this and is it a broad overreach? I can assure you that I have done my due diligence, and it does exist. And teachers are being prepped to teach this content. And I believe that we need to get students back on track, and we need to start focusing on their education. And so with that being said, Representative Snyder, please, you're recognized to close on your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And again, thank you, members of the committee. I will be brief and just first want to start by saying thank you for the time. Thank you, Chair Mello. It is true. I've had to work for the last several weeks, and I do appreciate you putting this on the agenda today. And members, as we close, I think you hit the nail on the head. You know, it's so easy sometimes to say, you know, kind of get down in the weeds on what we're against and where there's differences of opinion. But what we are trying to do, especially within our education system, is make sure that we continue to promote the fundamental notion on what makes this country so special. And that is that every man and that every woman is created equal, that they are endowed by their creator with inalienable rights. And so as we look through, and as you referenced, Chair Mello, this is happening today. Under current programs that are being taught on how to teach our teachers, recommended reading from a prominent university here in the state, White Privilege, Unpacking the Invisible Knapsack. Another university in South Florida, a guided discussion where students are required to identify institutional biases and bases of prejudice with regard to race, ethnicity, gender, class, which flies in the face of everything we just talked about, that all men are created equal. So look forward to the continued conversations. With that, I close and hope for your favorable support.
Representative Snyder, having closed, Andrea, please call the roll.
Representatives Amnesty?
Yes.
Bell?
Yes.
Beltran?
Yes.
Burfield?
Yes.
Frost?
No.
Dunkley?
No.
Escamani?
No.
Esposito?
Yes.
Gonzalez-Pittman?
Yes.
Henson?
No.
Keene?
No.
Lopez?
Yes.
Placencia?
Yes.
Rudman?
Yes.
Schoaf?
Yes.
Tant?
No.
Temple?
Yes.
And Chair Mello?
Yes.
12 yeas and 6 nays, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Andrea. By your vote, HB 1291 is shown reported favorably. Thank you, Representative
Thank you,
Snyder. Members, that concludes our agenda. Seeing no further business, Representative Lopez moves we rise.